Anyway, thank you very much. Morning, as you know, the framework now, the relevant person in the team, or one of the relevant people in the team, gives a very quick overview of the sort of material which we have been finding either directly in this research or this project or in other research. I think that I'd say that in this context we're reflecting work which we've done for TCPA, for London Councils, for GLA, for MAC, and for a number of other abbreviations. But here I'm just giving very quick things, so I'm not giving any of the evidence behind it. But I think the starting point, probably was the ending point, is if we need labour, international migrants are a lot cheaper for London than internal migrants and other ways of increasing the indigenous population, because they tend to live, to use services very much less than established households in the country. They live in smaller homes, usually in flats, often in the private rented sector, and they live at higher densities. And that is true whether you come from New York, or whether you come from Dubai, or whether you come from Bangladesh. They use fewer educational facilities, at least initially, and this is the whole point, this is the initial stages, because they have fewer children to begin with. They use fewer health services, they often don't even register, and there are many other services which they use less than the indigenous population. Now, over time, that use converges to the indigenous population's use. So if they stay 10 years, then they will look exactly like any other household of similar age, household structure, and income group. So this is only an early stage process. If they stay on, then they will converge towards the norm. There are exceptions even before that. One of them, of course, is language issues, the extent to which there are costs associated with translation, etc., but also particularly in the educational system. There are issues around excessive turnover, particularly where the migrants living in the private rented sector and may move on quite often. Children often don't stay very long in the same group. That's bad for their education, it's bad for the other kids' education. There are costs associated with not using services, of which the most obvious and best documented is TB, where people don't come to the services at the right time, and that obviously has costs not just to them, but it's the traditional externality story. And there are costs because people don't know how the local services work or don't like the local services, so they are disproportionately likely to go to A&E if they need help. So there are reasons why there will be issues on services. But in general, in service terms, not to say anything about the totality, in service terms, better if they come. They stay quite a while, but not too long. 10 years, or 8 years, make friends, leave happy, and keep the relationships up, particularly in terms of business. That, I suspect, is one's ideal migrant, if all you're interested in is the use of public services. And in that context, of course, a larger proportion of those who come from rich countries conform to that story. And people who come from poorer countries, however rich, are more likely to stay longer and therefore become like you and me. So that was one set of research areas which we looked at. So the second major one we've done, obviously, is the migrants' use of housing. Starting from, you know, how do we plan housing, how do we decide how many units should be built, what does the London Plan do, etc. The core issue from the point of view of migration is that the ONS, with its depleted resources or its lack of interest, dependent upon your view, treats migrants exactly as if they were locals. So a migrant aged 25 with an income, with this type of household structure, will demand exactly the same amount and demand a unit in exactly the same way as an indigenous population. That means that we are overestimating, in informal terms, we're overestimating the number of units which are required. And again, we move over a 10-year period to one which will look exactly like the rest of the population. But nobody knows, in terms of things like household projection, who stayed. They know how many there are, but we don't look at whether in 10 years' time we're talking about another batch of people who've turned over three times, or whether we're talking about the same person stayed on. So somewhere in West Midlands, for instance, enormous effect on what the structure of demand and need looks like as compared to what ONS says it looks like. There are lots of other reasons why ONS is wrong, but we'll stick with this one for the moment. In the context of London, it's obviously very important. They overestimate the number of households, but we know that there are incredible pressures on the housing market, so that may not be very important. But this importance of turnover, of understanding whether people do stay for 10 years, for 20 years, or whether they go in 3 years and are replaced by other people who then go in 3 years, is something which is not taken into account in these sorts of formal structures. The other thing, of course, is that they make it simple and say migrants and non-migrants, but the types of migrants have very different housing requirements. Refugees often have priority needs in terms of housing. They may be quite large households, and we'll come back to that. Economic migrants are usually with fewer dependents to begin with, but then there's also initial migrants and family migrants, and the mix of that changes each year. Non-European versus European obviously have different needs and different access, and rich country, poor country, which we've already talked about. But what we all know is that migrant housing demand is a major source of local tensions, or it seems being, in terms of the manifestos and the discussions of councillors and UKIP, etc. Now, the first, of course, is that particularly at the turn of the century, when there were a lot of refugees who came disproportionately to London, there was an enormous impact on social housing, particularly large units of social housing. But we changed the law. Some of us didn't particularly like it, but we changed the law to a situation where almost no refugee will end up in London while they are formally within the process of going through the refugee status and being housed by the state. So they may come back to London, they probably will come back to London, but they'll do so in the private sector. So the major issue, both in refugees and in longer term, is that large families need the limited number of large social units. The social sector have very, very small numbers of large units. Once you're eligible for housing benefit, which can be tomorrow in some cases and 3 years' time in other cases, then housing associations will put you on the waiting list or will treat you like anybody else. But they won't, of course, take you until you're eligible for housing benefit, because that's their safe revenue stream. So after about, say, 3 years, in some places migrants begin to be disproportionately accommodated in social housing. By migrants here, we mean, because that's what the data shows, people born abroad. Now, they may have married a local, there may be many, many reasons why they're getting into the social sector which don't imply at all that they're jumping any queue. They are in the queue in the normal way. And it's important that this concentration, this disproportionate concentration of migrants and ethnic groups, and we do have to take both of these, because housing often talks about ethnicity and less often talks about migration, and sorting this out is quite problematic. This is the case across Europe. So this, I hope you can't read it because it's got far too much detail in it. 12 countries we were looking at in terms of social housing across Europe. There isn't a country there where people born abroad, where it's known, aren't disproportionately in the social housing sector once they've been there for some time. and ethnic minorities similarly. And to a very significant extent, this simply says that there is a proportion of these groups who are very poor, because what's housing them is their poverty and their vulnerability in one way or another, not their ethnic origin or their place of birth. So going back, what we do end up though is concentrations of poverty in ethnic groups by tenure and by location. There's two distinct things. Obviously, if you're going to get concentrations in the social sector, you will get concentrations by tenure. But tenure doesn't necessarily mean space, because we do have the right to buy and many other things have meant that there rarely is areas which are just one type of tenure. But there are issues around us about insider-outsider attitudes. People, indigenous populations in localities in our type of work, and there's a lot of other types of work in this context, and David will come back to it, they'll make little distinction between migration and ethnicity. They do stress the fact that there's evidence that more established migrants are being more anti than the indigenous in some cases. The example of France today, all over the newspapers, which I saw this morning, is not atypical elsewhere. But do people really care if a person came from abroad, or whether they came from somewhere else in Britain, or from the next door local authority? And the further down you go, the less they care. They just care they're coming in. That'll be done. So just finally on community, I think the thing which we've done most on is the role of the private rented sector in this context, and the extent to which private rented housing with its very short-term tenure can mean that people are being kicked out after 6 months or after a year simply because they pushed the rent up. And many people, that's not the case. Many people will be staying stable and staying in the same place for 3, 4, 10 years. But there is a significant turnover, and that generates the higher cost to community, which we've talked about already. The second thing is that the policy pressures, particularly on housing benefit, but in other ways as well, are moving people out of London. And although I'm not saying this because it was just an aside and I haven't seen the detailed data, it is clear that people are moving much further than were initially expected. So people are moving from central London out of London rather than moving to, if they're moving for these housing welfare reasons, they're moving right out of London. But more generally, I think that there's an issue that aspirant households take much more notice of their community, especially if they're family households, and those who are discouraged, this make up of both social rented and private renting, with this mix of aspiration and discouragement, are much less involved. And are migrants any different in that way, except perhaps, potentially, at least in the short run, they're more aspirant. And finally, that comes to the speed of change, and that, I know, is where David would love to take over.
Thank you very much.